Hi everyone and welcome back. Look, most Australians probably have no idea that in 1973 our Constitution was effectively altered without a referendum. Now, you might wonder how our current government gets away with the nonsense that they peddle on a day-to-day basis without our consent, without our approval. Well, I'm about to show you why. So make sure you listen to the end and make sure that you hit like and subscribe. Make sure you put a comment in below because it does help the algorithm push the video a little bit further, gets a bit more reach, and hopefully more people can see what happened. So I ran a poll and 77% of people said that they want to know exactly what happened with Australia's constitution in 1973. 20% of people said that they already know, which I think is brilliant. But I'd still suggest that you stay along and jump in the comments and put your thoughts in as well. But for the 4% who voted that they're not interested, look, I've done you a big favour as well. I'll put a link in the description below to Abby Chatfield videos, Mr. Beast, that kind of thing. You'll be a lot happier over there. But for the rest of you, buckle up, because what happened in 1973 wasn't just paperwork. It was the quiet reshaping of who we are as a nation. And no, it wasn't just adding some full stops and some commas. It was a literal change, a literal alteration. But the thing is, for that change to be lawful under our constitution, it had to be approved by you. It had to be approved by me, by the people. The problem is, it was never put before the people for their approval. This move bypassed section 128 of the Commonwealth Constitution. And what I'm about to share, it's definitely not theory. This is documented fact. This topic just isn't widely known or properly understood. It is quite complex. Experts have been trained to play it down, to ignore it, to pass it off as just a symbolic change. And look, I get why, because if you, the public, actually understand exactly what happened, and if it was ever forced to be fixed, which I believe we have the power to do, the consequences for our current government and for our entire legal system would be utterly devastating. And look, I am aware of that. But devastation as a result of a poor decision that was made 50 years ago doesn't change the truth. It doesn't change the facts. Now, I wasn't there in 1973. Most of us probably weren't there in 1973. A lot of the individuals who pushed this through probably aren't even alive anymore. But the breach was made. And it's never been rectified. And here's the part that's going to shock you. The High Court judges themselves, they know exactly what I'm about to share. But to this day, no one has ever successfully brought it to them and challenged it in the High Court. What we're going to do to start is just open up section 128 of the Commonwealth Constitution, right? This section here is titled Mode of Altering the Constitution. So this is what must happen if we intend to alter the Constitution in any way. This Constitution shall not be altered except in the following manner. The proposed law for the alteration must be passed by an absolute majority of each House of the Parliament. So the Parliament comes first. Then it says that proposed law has to be submitted in each state and territory to the electors qualified to vote. Now, who's the electors qualified to vote? Just in case you're not sure, that's you. You are the final step. And then down in the fourth paragraph, and if in a majority of the states, a majority of the electors voting approve the proposed law, and if a majority of all the electors voting also approve the proposed law, it shall be presented to the Governor General for the Queen's assent. Now, in just regular layman's terms, in plain English, any alteration to the Constitution, any proposed law that alters it, must ultimately be approved by the people, by referendum. Very straightforward. Alteration is the key word here. Not how you choose to interpret alteration, but not is it just symbolic. It just says shall not be altered except in the following manner. So what law was it that they actually passed without our approval in 1973? It was called the Royal Style and Titles Act of 1973. This is not a rumour. It's an act of the Australian Parliament. It appears on the Federal Register as an act in force. It's titled Number 114 of 1973, an act relating to the Royal Style and Titles. So it received royal assent on the 19th of October 1973 under the Whitlam government, and it commenced the same day. So what did this law actually do? This law authorised a new style and title for the monarch. Now, to see how serious that is, you have to look at what the Queen's title was before and then what it became after. So let's start with 1953. In the Royal Style and Titles Act of 1953, the Queen's title for Australia was Elizabeth II, by the grace of God of the United Kingdom, Australia, and her other realms and territories, Queen, Head of the Commonwealth, Defender of the Faith. Now that particular wording explicitly ties Australia to the United Kingdom. Same crown as the United Kingdom, same sovereign authority, still Defender of the Faith, which is an English title. Now watch what happens in 1973. In the Royal Style and Titles Act of 1973, the new wording is Elizabeth II, by the grace of God, Queen of Australia and her other realms and territories, Head of the Commonwealth. So the words of the United Kingdom is gone, and the words Defender of the Faith is gone. And for the first time in Australian law, the monarch is described as the Queen of Australia, no longer Queen of the United Kingdom and Australia. Now that is not punctuation, that is a structural shift. That's Parliament redefining the Crown itself, the source of authority that the Constitution actually relies on. And here's the issue. That change was done without a referendum of the Australian people. It was defended as a symbolic step and described as constitutional evolution to reflect Australia's independent status. And look, if Australia wants to evolve its constitutional identity, fine. If we as a nation choose to say we now have a distinct Australian crown, fine, that's our choice. That would be what the people voted for. But the people have to approve that first. Section 128 of our Constitution says so. And they didn't. We weren't asked. We weren't even given a vote. So when the Whitlam government and the Parliament in 1973 relabeled the monarch from Queen of the United Kingdom and Australia to just the Queen of Australia, they weren't just changing cosmetics. They were actually cutting the formal link to the British Crown and asserting a separate Australian Crown without going through the only lawful process the Constitution actually gives us for an alteration. You see, the thing is, the Constitution doesn't care whether you call it stylistic. It doesn't care whether you call it symbolic. It doesn't care if you call it just evolution. It says word for word, this Constitution shall not be altered except in the following manner. And in 1973, that manner was not followed. So the question now isn't, was it symbolic? The question is, did the rule book that governs this country get sidestepped completely? Did it just get pushed to the side and overlooked? And if it did, what does that mean for everything that was built on top of it, for everything that was built after it since 1973? Let's talk consequences, because this is the part you're never supposed to even ask. So if you redefine the monarch from shared with the United Kingdom to completely independent Queen of Australia, you're not just changing a title, you're changing the source, the very source of authority that signs our laws, that appoints our judges, that issues commissions and gives assent. Now that raises brutal questions. Did Parliament go beyond its power? because Parliament can pass laws for the peace, order, and good government of the Commonwealth, but Parliament cannot amend the constitutional structure itself without a referendum, without your approval. So did the Whitlam government go past its lawful limits? If the 1973 Act didn't follow Section 128 of our Constitution, was it invalid from day one? Now, if the answer to that is yes, then what about everything that followed? If Queen of Australia was never lawfully created, then every legal action done in that name, every assent, all of the appointments, all of the oaths, commissions, all sit on a foundation that's never actually been approved by the people. Now, could that undermine laws that were signed? Could that undermine High Court appointments? Could that even reach forward into the Australia Act 1986? See, here's another thing. What exactly is the Crown of Australia? Is that a legally distinct crown that was properly created? Or is it just a convenient label that was declared without going through the people, without following the correct process? And if it is distinct, who authorised the separation from the British Crown? Was that the moment that Australia quietly behaved like a republic without openly saying it? Another question. If the written constitution still speaks about the Queen in the sense of the old link, but the modern legal system talks about and refers to the Queen of Australia, are we actually talking about the same office? Or did the political system swap in a new definition of the Queen without ever changing the words in the book the proper way or the correct way? And more importantly, where was our voice in that? Because the Constitution does not belong to Parliament. The Constitution belongs to the people. And Section 128 is literally the safety lock that says you can't alter this without going back and asking the public. So here's the biggest issue. If the rule book was quietly worked around once, can it happen again? What's to stop another symbolic or maybe an evolutionary change on any topic just being pushed through without you? Should Australia revisit this properly? Should it be put openly to the people so that we can settle it? Because honestly, maybe the people might approve it. Maybe you'd say, yeah, we want a fully Australian crown. We're perfectly happy with it. Just lock it in. Look, and if that's the case and that's what we choose, great. That then becomes legitimate and everyone is off the hook. But if the people say, no, we actually don't like this, that's not what we wanted, then we're sitting on a constitutional structure that governments have been using for the last 50 years without our consent. Now, do you just look the other way? Do we just pretend that nothing happened? Or do we admit what happened as a country? Do we work on ways to fix it and restore legitimacy? And look, these aren't fringe questions. This goes to who we are as a nation, who we owe our allegiance to, and whether the rule of law still actually means what it says in black and white. And really, the truth is simple. If our constitution says the people must approve the alteration, well, then until the people do, the question remains open. Now, if the 1973 breach had never actually happened and it went to referendum and the people just said, no, we want to leave it the way it is, the chain of authority behind every law passed since then would be fundamentally different. Everything governments do, every bill, every order, every appointment flows from the Crown's legal authority. When Whitlam's government redefined that Crown in October 1973 without public approval, it effectively shifted who that authority comes from. Now, the Commonwealth Parliament drew its power from the British Crown under our original constitution. And that meant all authority flowed from a foreign but defined legal source, the Crown in the United Kingdom, and the people's consent was guaranteed by Section 128. The system had rigid guardrails, and any structural changes like redefining sovereignty or allegiance needed a referendum. When the Queen of Australia title was created without a vote, Parliament began acting as if sovereignty were fully domestic, as if the Crown and the people were already one and the same. And that blurred the line between constitutional power and political will. It gave governments far greater freedom to interpret their powers internally without needing to consult or refer up the chain. Over time, that culture filtered down into how modern governments operate today, especially at the state level. They learned that they could pass framework legislation with very little or no public awareness, label major structural shifts as administrative or symbolic, governed by regulation and emergency powers rather than open consent. So if the 1973 breach never happened, we'd likely still have premiers and prime ministers, but they'd be answerable through a clearer, lawful hierarchy. They couldn't just invent new frameworks like, you know, the digital ID systems or treaties or emergency laws without first going through proper constitutional channels. You'd still have politics, but not the kind of unchecked, corporatized governance that thrives on blurred constitutional foundations. The scoundrels. Look, thanks for watching. I hope that went through and you understood what it was all about. Don't forget to hit like and subscribe. Send the video to your favorite constitutional expert. Drop a comment below. Did you know about this? Was it a breach? Was it all good? Let me know your thoughts. I'll see you in the next video.